When Highgate returned to his own office, he felt a hollowness in the pit of his stomach and a spinning sensation in his head. What was he going to do? Part of him wanted to flee, to leave Denver, to leave Colorado and never come back. But what would he do then? How would he make a living? Highgate had just finished clearing away the governor's desk when he saw a letter from the governor written on stationery with an official letterhead. At that moment, Highgate saw a solution to his problem.
Yes!
Taking one sheet of stationery, he returned to his own desk. Over the last few years, as the governor's private secretary, Highgate had learned many things. He knew which state accounts the governor could draw money from. He knew which of these accounts were subject to frequent use, which accounts were rarely used and thus rarely audited. He also knew how to sign the governor's name in such a way that even those most familiar with his signature would not be able to tell the difference. Returning to the governor's desk, he borrowed the governor's pen and ink. That would make the document all the more authentic.
State of Colorado Office to the Governor, to Disbursement Officer. Miscellaneous accounts. Pay to the bearer of this note $500 in cash. John Longrout, Governor.
When Highgate returned to the bucket of blood that night, he had his hand down in his jacket pocket wrapped securely around the envelope containing the money.
Did you get the money?
Is that the way you greet someone?
Did you get the money?
Yes, I got the money.
Give it to me.
Before I give you this money.
I've got a gun under this table and it's pointing right at your dick. If you don't give me the money right now, I'm guaranteed I'm gonna shoot it off.
Wouldn't dare shoot me in a public place like this.
Look around, Highgate. There isn't one person in here that I couldn't get to slit your throat for $5. You think anyone would blink twice if I shot your dick off right in the middle of this place? Fuck no. That's why I chose this place.
All right. Here's the money.
Highgate removed the envelope from his pocket and passed it over to No-Nose. No-Nose put his pistol away, then took the money out of the envelope and began to count it.
It's all there. $500.
No-Nose nodded, smiled, and put the money into his own pocket.
There now. Do you see what you can do when you put your mind to it? You didn't think you'd be able to come up with money.
This was easy compared to asking the governor for $20,000. I'm telling you, he isn't going to go through with that.
Oh, he'll go through with it. I'll see you around.
Because his birth had been the result of his mother having been raped, he was not given a name at birth. He was referred to only as Boy, or White Eyes, until he was old enough to be enrolled in the Indian school. There, one of the teachers who had a passion for Shakespeare gave him the name Goneril, after a character in King Lear. Goneril grew up half white and half Indian, not living in both worlds, but trapped between the two worlds. When his mother died, he lost all connection with his Indian heritage, and the fact that he was a half-breed kept him apart from white society. The abnormal environment in which Goneril grew to adulthood created a being who, for all intent and purpose, was totally dysfunctional. But in a perverse way, it provided him with a persona that was both unique and deadly. Goneril had learned that such a character trait, while off-putting to normal society, could be a valuable asset to those who wanted his services. He became a killer for hire. Goneril was a man who would kill without compunction. The life of a human being was as unimportant to him as was the life of a cockroach. It made no difference to him who his target was or why they were being killed. The only thing that mattered to him was the money he was paid for the job. He was totally dispassionate about those he killed, except for one. Early in his life, Goneril learned the identity of his father and made a vow to find him and kill him for what he had done to his mother. By the time he found him, though, Clyde Payson was literally standing at death's door, about to ascend the steps to the gallows where he was to be hanged by the neck until dead. Payson did not recognize Goneril, but there was no reason he should have. He had never seen Goneril and didn't even know he existed. Payson learned that he was a father only in the last second of his life, hearing Goneril shout the news to him, even as he was falling through the open trap door. Frustrated by events beyond his control, Goneril altered his plan. If he could not kill his father, he would kill the person who had thwarted that goal. He would kill the man who was responsible for his father's death. And so it happened that the one thing that had been Goneril's greatest asset, dispassion, was cast aside in his quest. Goneril was obsessed with the task of killing Matt Jensen. He had tried and failed on several previous occasions. Each time he failed, the compulsion grew until now it totally dominated him. As a result, he now had an almost debilitating determination to kill the man he deemed responsible for his father's death. He had not put aside his intention to kill Matt Jensen, but he was running out of money, and he was going to have to get back to business. That's why when Paulie Moore asked him if he would meet with someone who might want to hire his services, he agreed. The meeting place was the saloon in Dorena. Goneril was sitting alone at a table as he waited. He was always alone, partly because he was a half-breed, but mostly because people were uncomfortable around him. And that suited him fine, because over the years he had become very uncomfortable around others. He looked up as someone approached his table.
Your name Goner?
Goneril.
Yeah, Goner. That's what I said. My name's Strayhorn. I've got a job for you if you're interested.
Sit down.
It pays $500.
Must be a big job.
It is. But I ain't going no higher than 500, so you can take it or leave it.
Who is it?
Huh. I like that.
You like what?
I like that you said who is it rather than what is it.
You want me to kill someone, don't you?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Remember, it's $500, not a penny more. It's Matt Jensen.
Goneril fought hard to resist the urge to smile. Could he actually be this lucky? Was someone actually willing to pay him to kill the very man he was determined to kill anyway?
You ever heard of him?
Yes, I've heard of him.
He's a hard man to kill.
Yes.
But got something that might make it a little bit easier.
What's that?
We got something he wants. I figure we can use it as bait to draw him out. You don't have to go up against him or anything like that. We don't want you to prove anything. We just want you to kill the son of a bitch.
That's what I'll do. As soon as you give me the money.
No, sir. You get the money after Jensen's dead.
Then get yourself someone else.
What? Wait a minute. You tell me you ain't gonna take the job?
I'm telling you that I will only do it if you give me the money in advance.
Well, if we give you the money and you don't get the job done...
You don't have to worry about that. If I tell you I'm going to kill him, then you can be sure I will do it.
How about if I give you half now and half after you kill him?
All right. Half now. Half when it's done.
Strayhorn gave Goneril half the money, then put the rest back in his pocket.
Don't go spending my money now, because after this job is done, when I come for it, I don't intend to wait. If you don't have every penny of what you owe me, I will kill you.
Don't you be worrying none about that. It'll be here.
It better be. Now, what is this you say you have that he wants?
Oh, he snatched a girl. Governor's niece. Jensen's coming after her.
Where is she now?
We got her hid away in a cabin up on Mustang Creek.
This is the governor's niece, you say?
Yeah.
Why did you take her?
Well, that ain't really none of your business why we took her. The only business you gotta concern yourself with is killing Matt Jensen.
Fair enough. Where did you snatch the girl?
What do you need to know that for?
Using her as bait will draw Jensen to you, right?
Yeah.
He's going to know where you snatched her, so he'll start there. All I need to do is put myself somewhere between there and the girl.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean. All right, we took her off the train when it stopped for water at Mustang Creek.
You took her off the trail at Mustang Creek, and you're keeping her in a cabin on Mustang Creek?
Yeah.
That's all I need to know.
You mean he didn't come back with you?
Teach spoke to Strayhorn when he returned to the cabin.
No.
That son of a bitch has just run off with our money, is what he done?
No, I don't think so. I think he's gonna do the job.
Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But I tell you, I don't intend to wait for him.
What do you mean?
I mean I intend to kill the son of a bitch myself.
You're wanting the rest of that money for yourself, ain't you?
Well, I hadn't thought about it like that, but why not? If I kill him, I have as much right to the money as Goneril.
Wait a minute, is that right? If Teach and I kill Jensen, we'll get the money?
What do you mean, you and me?
I'm coming with you. That is, if we really will get the money. What do you say, Strayhorn?
I don't care who kills the son of a bitch as long as someone does.
What about it, Teach? Do you care if I come with you?
I guess with someone like Jensen, it wouldn't hurt to have someone along. So if you want to go with me, come along.
You won't kill him.
What do you mean we won't kill him?
Matt Jensen is more of a man than all of you put together. You can try, but you won't kill him.
We'll see about that, girlie. We'll just see about that.
When the train stopped for water at Mustang Creek, Matt got off. He was standing alongside the track as Spirit was brought down from the stock car. The man who had been the conductor on the train the night that Lane was taken pointed.
The moon was pretty bright that night, so I watched him leave. There were five of them, and they stayed very close to the creek until I could no longer see them.
Which side of the creek?
They were on the right side, for as long as I was able to see them.
Did they have a horse for the girl?
No, sir, they did not. As I recall, they put her up on a horse in front of one of them.
You've been very helpful. Thanks.
I wish I could tell you more.
This is a start.
With that, Matt mounted up and started out on the trail. After about a mile, he saw something hanging in a bush, and riding up to it quickly, he leaned down to retrieve it. It was a tatting-trimmed handkerchief. Holding it to his nose, he smelled the hint of lavender that was Lane's signature perfume. He wadded it up in his hand, then stuck it in his shirt pocket. It was obvious that Lane was doing all she could to help him.
Good girl, Lane. Just hang on. I'm coming for you. Spirit, if they have hurt that girl in any way...
He didn't finish the sentence. He didn't have to.
He'll have to come this way, so I figure all we have to do is find us a good place to wait. Then when we see him, we open up on him.
If he don't see us first.
Are you worried?
I just keep thinking about Hennessy and Taylor and how they thought they were going to kill him, but they didn't.
Yeah, but you heard what Pauly said. That dumb son of a bitch Hennessy called Jensen out. We ain't going to do nothing like that.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Because they were approaching the crest of a ridge, neither Teach nor Decker had any idea that Matt was just on the other side coming toward them. Matt couldn't see him either, but he heard them talking. And because they were close enough that he could hear them quite clearly, it also meant that they were close enough for him to confront. Matt slapped his legs against the side of his horse and crested the ridge. There, no more than 20 yards in front of him, he saw Teach and Decker.
Why don't you fellas just hold it right there?
What the hell? Where'd you come from?
Where I came from isn't your problem. Your problem is that I'm here. Now drop those guns and lead me to the girl.
A fountain of blood squirted up from Spirit's neck and the animal went down on its front knees, then collapsed onto its right side. The fall pinned Matt's leg under his horse. He also dropped his pistol on the way down, and now it lay just out of his reach for his grasping fingers.
What the hell? Who's that shooting? Is that one of our men? Who is it?
Who the hell cares? Look at him! Jensen's pinned down! Now's my chance to kill a son of a bitch!
Teach's bullet dug into his saddle and sent up a little puff of dust, but did no further damage.
Come on, Teach! Let's get the hell out of here while the gate is good.
I ain't leaving till I put a bullet in that bastard. I still owe the bastard for what he did to Loomis Calum alone. Only thing is, I can't get him from here.
Teach slapped his legs against the side of his horse and moved around to get a better shot at Matt. Matt made one more desperate grab for his pistol, but it was still out of his reach. His rifle, however, was in the saddle sheath on the side of the horse that was on the ground, and Matt could see about 6 inches of the stock sticking out. He grabbed it and was gratified to see that the weapon could be pulled free.
Say hello to my friends when you get to hell.
Say hello to them yourself, you dumb fuck.
He got Teach! Jensen got Teach!
When Matt located the source of the shooting, he saw, at the crest of the next hill beyond the little valley, a mounted man with one leg thrown casually across his saddle. Using that leg to provide a stable firing platform, the shooter raised his rifle to fire again. With a gasp of disbelief, Matt realized that this man was firing from at least 1,000 yards away. Matt fired back, not with any expectation of actually hitting his target, but merely to show his enemy that he wasn't completely helpless. In a way, Matt was running a bluff, because he was practically helpless. He was still trapped under his horse, and he knew if he didn't get himself free soon, whoever was shooting at him would be able to change locations and catch Matt in an exposed position. He tried again to pull his leg free, but he was unable to do so. Then he got an idea. He stuck the stock of the rifle just under Spirit's side and grabbed the barrel. Using the rifle as a lever, he pushed up and wedged just enough space between the horse's flesh and the ground to allow him to slip his leg free. His first fear was that his leg might be broken, but as soon as he pulled it out, he knew that it wasn't. The blood circulation was cut off, however, and when he tried to stand, he promptly fell back down again. As it was, that turned out to be a blessing.
Holy shit!
Crawling on his belly, Matt slithered and twisted his way back up to the crest of the ridge. He reached the crest. Matt twisted around behind the crest and looked back toward the place where the shots were coming from. With the crest providing him with cover and a rifle in his hands, he was no longer an easy target. Whoever was after him realized this as well, for Matt saw him put his rifle back in the saddle sheath, then turn and ride away as casually as if he were riding down Main Street. And why not? There was no way Matt was going to hit him at this distance, at least not with a .44-40 Winchester. After the rider was gone, Matt managed to capture Teach's horse, which had trotted away during the shooting, but afterward had wandered back to begin cropping grass. Matt led the horse back to Spirit, then stood there for a moment, looking down at the horse that had served him so well for so long.
You're a good horse, a good companion, Spirit. You deserve better than to be left out here like this. I'm pretty sure you'd understand. We started on this job together, and I aim to finish it for both of us.
Once Matt was mounted, he rode down into the little valley, then to the top of the distant ridge to the spot where the shooting had come from. He wanted to have a look at the place where the gunman had been. A flash of sunlight led him to the first sign. When he picked it up, he saw that it was the brass casing of a .50 caliber shell. He had seen such rifles and knew that, when fitted with a telescope, they could be fired accurately at ranges up to 1,000 yards. He also saw something else. A .50 caliber bullet with a little piece of paper wrapped around it. He wasn't surprised by what he saw when he unwrapped the paper. Lane was wearing gray cotton trousers, a white shirt, and a vest, all belonging to Hodge Decker. She was also wearing a hat, which concealed her full head of hair so that her sex could be determined only if someone studied her closely. She was not bound or restricted in any way, but Strayhorn let it be known that if she tried to get away from them, he would kill her. They stopped at the edge of town, and Strayhorn pointed to the sign.
You see this?
The sign read, "You are entering Darina. We got our own law. We don't need none of yours."
I see it.
This here is what's known as an open town. Some folks might call it an outlaw town. What that means is, there ain't no sense in you trying to tell anyone here that you're our prisoner, because it won't do you no good. Fact is, it'd probably be worse for you, because if someone else gets a hold of you, well, more than likely they won't be as nice to you as we have.
Do you call the way you've treated me nice?
Oh, yeah. You don't have no idea what some of the folks in this town would do to you if they got you. Fact is, if it wasn't for keeping you from being all marked up so we can get the full amount of money for you, why, we would already had our fun with you, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Good. Then you'll believe me when I tell you it's best for you if you don't say nothing to nobody. Don't let nobody even know you're a woman, you understand?
I understand.
I still think it wasn't smart to bring her here.
Well, you'd rather stay out there at the cabin and wait on Jensen, would you?
Why, we wouldn't have to stay there. We could have gone somewhere else.
Where? No matter where we might go, Jensen would track us. So let him track us here. I figure we'll outnumber him 100 to 1. Even if he finds the girl, there won't be nothing he can do about it.
I think Strayhorn is right, No-Nose.
Maybe, Polly. We'll see.
The four rode on into town, and to those on the street, there was nothing remarkable about them. It was just four more riders coming into town, at least three of whom they recognized. When the group stopped in front of the saloon, Strayhorn, No-Nose, and Polly dismounted easily, but Lane stayed in the saddle.
Get down off that horse.
I can't. The only way I've ever ridden before this was side saddle. I don't know how to get off.
Just stand in this stirrup, throw your right leg over, and get down. And do it quick, because I ain't going to help you.
Lane did as Strayhorn directed, only instead of throwing her leg over behind, she brought it around in front, then slid down, as if dismounting from a side saddle.
I hope to hell nobody's seen you do that.
Never in her life had Lane been in a place like this. All around her, she heard men laughing and talking loudly, using language that she knew was vulgar, even though she didn't even know what some of the words meant. It was the women in the saloon who were the most shocking. She couldn't even look at them, so scandalous were they. The woman who had come to the table to talk to her was wearing a dress that was cut so low in front that her breasts spilled over. And yet, she was one of the more modest ones. There were at least half a dozen other women in the saloon who made no effort at all to cover their breasts. Even though Lane was well-read, she had no idea that such places even existed. And she could feel her cheeks flaming in embarrassment. As soon as the quartet entered the bar, they caught the eye of a whore named Mabel. She left the saloon, then hurried down the alley to her crib. Her crib was a small one-room house that served as both her home and a place to which she could bring her customers. She had a strong suspicion about something, and she wanted to check it out. Stepping inside, she located the newspaper she had brought back to her crib the day before when someone had left it in the saloon. The story she was looking for was on the very first page of the paper.
No leads on missing woman Porter Foley murdered.
Mabel read the entire article until she came to the part she was looking for.
The railroad is offering a reward of $1,000 to anyone who can offer assistance in the safe recovery of Miss McKenzie.
Mabel had heard talk of some big job that No-Nose Nelson and Marcus Strayhorn had planned. She knew about the botched railroad robbery and assumed the big job she had heard people talk about would be another robbery attempt. But she knew now that it wasn't robbery at all. They had taken a girl from the train, and she would bet anything in the world that the person wearing Decker's clothes was that girl.
Railroad is offering a reward of $1,000 to anyone who can offer assistance in the safe recovery of Miss McKenzie.
With $1,000, Mabel could leave this place and buy a small house somewhere. She could start over, maybe take in some sewing or washing. With that much money, she would never have to be on the line again. And there was something else, something that had nothing to do with the reward money. She felt sorry for the girl. And if there was any way she could help her escape, she was going to do it. Mabel returned to the saloon, and even though she was carefully avoiding Strayhorn's table, she continued to watch it from wherever she was in the room. She had no specific plan in mind, but she needed to be alert for any opportunity that might come her way. She moved about the saloon, engaging in banter with the customers, sometimes refilling their glasses for them, but always keeping an eye on the person in Decker's clothes, the person that Mabel was convinced was the governor's niece.
Here comes a half-breed.
Mabel looked toward the front door. She saw Goneril. Mabel had never been with Goneril, had never drunk with him, and had never so much as spoken to him. In a town that had more than its share of robbers and murderers, she found Goneril to be particularly frightening. The only good thing was that he seemed as disinterested in Mabel and the other whores as they were frightened of him. Goneril looked neither left nor right, but walked directly to Strayhorn's table. Mabel moved close enough to be able to overhear the conversation.
Hey, Strayhorn, I thought you hired Goneril to take care of Jensen.
I did.
Then what's he doing here in Dorena?
Goneril didn't wait for a greeting. but began talking right away.
What's the idea of sending Teach and Deckard after Jensen?
Did they kill him?
No, they didn't kill him. And their being in the way kept me from killing him.
Sounds to me like it's between you and them.
Not anymore, it isn't.
What do you mean?
They're dead. Both of them.
Jensen killed him?
Jensen killed Teach. I killed Deckard.
You killed Deckard?
Yes.
Why?
You hired me to kill Jensen. I didn't want the competition.
Oh, Teach and Deckard were a couple of hotheads. I tried to keep them from going after Jensen, but they went out on their own anyways. Oh, don't worry. No one else is gonna try.
I killed Deckard, and I will kill anyone else who gets in my way. Do I make myself clear?
Pretty clear.
Goneril stared at them for a moment longer. Then he turned and left the saloon.
Teach and Deckard. They were so cocksure of themselves.
Teach had been with you for a long time, hadn't he, Strayhorn?
Yeah, Teach was my cousin. After his ma run off and his pa got himself killed, my ma brought him in and raised him like one of her own. So Teach was more like a brother than a cousin.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, hell, far as I'm concerned, it just means we only have to split the money three ways now. That's $5,000 apiece, boys.
If the governor pays.
He'll pay. He better pay.
Mr. Strayhorn, I need to,
You need to what?
I need to, the water. I have to,
What the hell? That little backwards bitch. I think she's telling you she needs to take a piss.
There's an outhouse out back.
Are you just gonna let her go by herself?
Where the hell's she gonna go? She knows what'd happen if anyone in this town got hold of her.
Overhearing the conversation, Mabel moved quickly to step out the back door. Mabel was waiting just out of sight as Lane came into the alley. She saw Lane stop and stare at the odoriferous outhouse in obvious dismay over its condition and her situation. She hesitated.
It don't get to smelling no better by you a-waiting, honey.
Oh!
Go ahead, honey. I'll keep an eye out for you.
What?
I said I'll keep an eye open for you. You being a woman and all, I don't reckon you'd be wanting any men to come in on you while you're taking care of your business now, would you?
No, you know I'm a woman?
Honey, I not only know what you are, I know who you are. You're the governor's daughter, ain't you?
I'm his niece.
I knew it. Strayhorn and them others snatched you from the train, didn't they? And they're holding you till they can get some money from the governor, huh?
Who are you?
I'm just a whore, honey. But even whores know right from wrong, and what they're doing with you is wrong.
I'm so afraid.
Yeah, well, don't you worry none, honey, because I'm going to get you away from them.
What's your name?
My name is Mabel. Mabel Franklin.
Mabel, I know you mean well, but you mustn't help me. Strayhorn told me what would happen if I tried to escape. And if you help me, it'll be just as dangerous for you.
Oh, take care of your business. And then you just leave the rest to me.
When Lane came out of the privy a few moments later, Mabel was still standing there.
Come with me.
Where? Strayhorn told me that everyone in town was an outlaw.
Honey, not everyone in town is an outlaw. Shoot. Fact is, we used to be a pretty nice town until people like Strayhorn moved in. They killed off the law we had and took over. There's some good folks in the town. They're just scared to do anything, that's all. Come on with me.
Where are we going?
Someplace where you'll be safe.
Mabel started up the alley with Lane. They had gone no farther than 20 yards or so when two men came around the corner. Mabel grabbed Lane and pulled the young woman against her. She leaned against the back wall of the dry goods store, then lifted one leg and wrapped it around Lane. Grabbing Lane's hand, she put it on her bare thigh, then pulled Lane's head down to her neck. When Lane tried to fight, she tightened the hold with her leg.
Damn, Mabel. You got one that can't even wait to get you into her crib.
Honey, if he's got the money, he can have me anywheres he wants.
Both continued on up the alley. Mabel waited until they turned a corner before she lowered her leg.
I'm so sorry, honey.
No, that's all right. I didn't understand what you were doing at first.
Come on. We've got to hurry before Strayhorn comes searching for you.
When they reached the end of the alley, Mabel crossed the street and went down into the Mexican quarters.
I have a friend here who will help us out.
Mabel went up to one of the little adobe houses.
Senorita Franklin?
Frederica, I need help. Please, let us in.
Si, come.
This is Frederica Areno.
As soon as Lane stepped into the house, she took off the man's hat she was wearing and let her hair fall.
Oh, me? You are a woman?
Yes, she is a woman, and she needs your help. We must not let Strayhorn find her.
Gracias, Señora Arino. Estoy en su deuda.
You speak Spanish?
I studied Spanish in school.
Oh, shoot, this is going to be so easy then. Frederica, you can...
I know what to do.
A younger version of Frederica came into the room then, accompanied by a young boy.
This is my daughter Maria and my son Esteban. She will help me. Esteban, go to the house of your Aunt Carmelita. Do as I tell you, and don't come back until I come for you.
The boy nodded and left reluctantly.
Well, I better go as well. I should be back before I'm missed. I wouldn't want anyone to find me over here.
Mabel, I don't know how to thank you.
You just do what Frederica says, and you'll be fine, sugar.
Half an hour later, with the help of Frederica and Maria, Lane had undergone a complete transformation. Gone were the men's clothes, replaced now by a bright yellow dress with black lace around a low-cut bodice. It was cinched tight at her waist. Her hair hung in long black tendrils secured with a tortoiseshell comb. Her skin had been slightly darkened with a tea made from onion skins. Her cheeks were heavily rouged, her lips painted red, and her eyes accented with a dark shadow. Looking through the window of Frederica's small house, Lane could see Strayhorn walking up and down in the middle of the street. Strayhorn fired his pistol into the air again.
Lane McKenzie, I know you ain't left town. If you know what's good for you, you better get out here now. If you don't show yourself in 1 minute, I'll kill you when I find you. You understand that, you bitch? Money or no money, I will kill you if I have to come find you. Now get out here now.
Lane shivered in fear.
I'll give $100 in cash to any man or woman who brings that bitch back to me. And don't be fooled. He's wearing a man's clothes.
Do not worry. He will not find you. Here, we will go to market now.
What?
Frederica pointed to the market, which was right across the street. Strayhorn was standing in front of the market.
We will go to market now.
No, Strayhorn is out there. He'll see me.
No, señorita. This is what he will see. You are no longer Lane McKenzie. You are my younger sister, Juanita Arino.
I'm afraid.
Señorita, he will not see you.
Lane accepted their assurances and agreed to go out with them.
Speak to me only in Spanish.
The three of them left her house and started toward the market. Seeing Frederica, Strayhorn came toward them. Lane felt her stomach draw tight in fear.
Hey, you! Frederica! I'm looking for an American woman who ran away from me. You seen her?
What does she look like?
What does she look like? Hell, she looks like an American! Only, she ain't like one of the ugly American whores. She's prettier than that. If you seen her, you'd know she was someone new.
I have not seen such a person.
What about you, girlie? You seen a gringo woman?
Strayhorn looked directly at Lane.
She does not speak English. I will ask her for you. ¿Usted ha visto a una mujer estadounidense hermosa?
Señora, he visto nada.
She says she has seen nothing.
I know damn well that bitch is somewhere. If you see her, I'll give you $100 to bring her to me.
May we go to market now?
What? Yeah, go on, get out of here. Lane McKenzie! It's too late for you now! When I find you now, I am gonna kill you!
He didn't recognize me. He looked right at me, but he didn't recognize me.
You are safe with us.
After a full day of looking for Lane McKenzie without success, Strayhorn came back to the saloon.
You lose your girlfriend, did you?
Shut up!
You didn't have to bring in your own girlfriend. I told you, anytime you want a real American woman, I'll take you to my crib.
I'd rather fuck a goat.
We like to please here in beautiful Dorina. If you prefer goats, I'm sure we can accommodate you.
Get out of here!
Oh, sure, honey. Whatever you say.
Strayhorn ordered steak and eggs from the kitchen, and when it was put on the table in front of him, he reached for the steak and picked it up in his hands.
Strayhorn, you really need to work on your table manners. Haven't you ever heard of a knife and fork?
Strayhorn looked up to see that the person who had just delivered his food was not the bartender, but Matt Jensen.
You!
Go ahead, take a bite. I wouldn't want to send a man to hell on an empty stomach.
Strayhorn held the piece of meat just in front of his mouth, staring wide-eyed at Matt.
Where'd you come from?
How'd you get here?
That's not how it works. I ask the questions, you answer them. Where's the girl?
Strayhorn suddenly dropped the stick and made a mad grab for his pistol, but Matt was quicker on the draw. Instead of shooting Strayhorn, though, he brought his pistol down hard on Strayhorn's head. Matt cut off a generous piece of the untouched steak and stuck it into his mouth. The rest of the saloon continued to watch him in silence.
I hear tell nearly everyone in Dorena is an outlaw. Whether you are or you aren't, makes no difference to me. I'm not here after anyone except Strayhorn and whoever was with him when he took a young woman from the train. And I'm also looking for that young woman.
You ain't the only one looking for her.
What do you mean?
The girl got away from Strayhorn sometime this morning. He's been looking for her all day.
So she is still alive?
Far as I know, she is. At least why she was this morning.
Matt looked over at Strayhorn.
Who else was with him?
No Nose Nelson and Polly Moore.
You know where they are?
No, I don't know.
All right, I'll find them myself.
Upstairs in one of the rooms in the bed of a whore, No-Nose heard the conversation. He sat up and swung his legs over to the side of the bed, then reached for his pistol. No-Nose began slipping back into his pants. As he was pulling on his boots, he kept his eye on the doorknob. He had just got them on when he saw the doorknob move ever so slightly.
Die, you son of a bitch! I'm dead!
No-Nose rushed across the room and kicked open the door. Matt had jiggled the doorknob, then stepped to one side no more than a second before the fusillade of bullets. When No-Nose appeared on the landing, Matt brought his pistol crashing into the back of No-Nose's head. The blow, plus the momentum of No-Nose's rush, carried him through the banister.
Oh, Mama, no!
Matt looked down at him, then realized he didn't have to hurry. No-Nose was dead.
He's here! He's in town now!
Goneril, who was sharing a stall with his horse, was sitting in the corner, eating beans from a can.
Where is he?
He's in the saloon! He's already killed No-Nose. He's got Strayhorn chained up to a post!
Trussed up like a pig going to market, is he?
What are you gonna do?
Goneril stood up, then walked over to his saddle and tack. He pulled the Remington rolling block rifle from its sheath, picked up a little cloth bag of 50 caliber shells, then started toward the ladder that led to the loft of the livery barn.
I'm going to kill the son of a bitch is what I'm going to do.
What do you want me to do?
I don't care what you do.
Polly watched the half-breed as he climbed into the loft until he could no longer see him. Then it dawned on him that if shooting started between Goneril and Jensen, the livery barn would not be the safest place to be. He left the barn and stepped into the billiards parlor next door. Up in the loft of the livery, Goneril prepared for his target. Cocking the hammer on his rifle freed the pivoted breech block. Then he thumbed the rolling block backward and down to expose the chamber. Pulling a 50 caliber shell from the little cloth bag, he inserted it into the chamber, then rolled the block upward and forward to again seal the breech. After loading, he eased the hammer forward to the half-cocked position, got down behind a bale of hay, and looked up the street toward the saloon. He aimed at the front door of the saloon, then waited. Back at the saloon, Mabel had watched the drama unfold, culminating with No-Nose crashing through the upstairs banister and breaking his neck when he fell. Several of the saloon patrons gathered around the body, looking down at it with morbid curiosity.
Y'all seen that?
Strayhorn was shouting from his position down on the floor, handcuffed to a supporting post.
He killed No-Nose in cold blood, same as he tried to kill me.
Where's the girl?
Even if I knew where the bitch was, I wouldn't tell you.
I know where she is.
Where is she?
According to a story I read in the paper, there's $1,000 reward to anyone who finds her. Is that right?
How's the girl?
She's fine. What about the reward?
Yeah, there is a reward, and I will see that you get it.
You bitch! You know where she is, and you didn't tell me?
I not only know where she is, I'm the one who took her there.
Whore. Your life ain't worth a plug nickel.
Yeah? What are you gonna do to me, chained up to the post like you are?
I got friends in this town.
Oh, you got no friends.
Where's the girl?
Like I told you, she's safe. I took her over to a house of a friend of mine, Frederica Areno.
The Mexican whore? You took her over to that... Wait a minute. Yes, I saw her! That was her! Frederica told me it was her sister, and I believed her because I didn't recognize her. But now I know that it was that Mackenzie bitch.
Where is this place?
Come with me, and I'll show you.
You don't need to be worrying none about no reward. You hear me, bitch? Neither of you will get out of this town alive.
At the far end of the street in the loft over the livery barn, Goneril saw the front door of the saloon open. Pulling the hammer back, he rested the rifle on a stanchion, then looked through the sights. There he was. Matt Jensen stepped through the door and was standing on the front porch, a perfect target. As Mabel started to step down from the stoop, she caught her foot on a loose board and nearly tripped.
Oh!
In order to regain her balance, she stepped in front of Matt.
Careful!
What happened?
You've been shot!
Shot!
Looking up, Matt saw a plume of gun smoke drifting away from the open window of the loft of the livery barn. Matt dragged Mabel back into the saloon and knelt down beside her.
I probably wouldn't have made it anywhere else anyway. Once a whore, always a whore.
You were trying to help an innocent woman. That had nothing to do with being a whore.
Promise me you'll get her back home safe.
I promise.
That's good. That's good.
Well, now that was just real tender. Yes, sir, that just brought tears to my eyes.
Matt stood up and looked down at Mabel for a moment, then started toward the back door of the saloon.
You gonna buy flowers for that whore's funeral, are you? Yeah, I believe that's what you're gonna do, all right. You gonna...
Matt said nothing to Strayhorn, nor did he even look back. It was just a kick in passing, but it was enough to leave Strayhorn bleeding from the nose and lips.
I'll kill you for this! You hear me? I'm gonna kill you!
Once outside behind the saloon, Matt darted down the alley, not toward the livery barn, but away from it. When he reached the far end of the alley, he saw a wagon coming up the cross street. Matt got on the side of the wagon away from the livery barn and, shielded by the wagon, crossed the main street unseen. When Matt drew even with the alley on the opposite side of the street, he started up the alley toward the livery barn. At the sound of Goneril's shot, Paulie left the billiards parlor, ran across the street, darted up alongside the leather goods store, then started up the alley. He saw Matt Jensen leaving the back of the saloon and jumped back behind the corner of the leather goods store to avoid being seen. When he looked around again, he saw Matt slip around behind a wagon and duck down to use it as concealment. Paulie ran up the alley to the saloon, then went inside.
Strayhorn! Strayhorn, you still here?
The hell else would I be?
Damn, what happened to you?
Never mind what happened to me. Just get me loose from here.
How the hell am I going to do that? I don't have the key.
You don't need a key.
What do you mean you don't need a key?
All you need is a nail or something to stick down inside the cuff here. Push the clasp out of the way and you can open it.
Well, I'll be damned.
In less than a minute, he had Strayhorn free.
Come on. I intend to put a few bullets in Jensen's carcass.
He's going after Goneril. Like as not, he'll be dead by the time we get there.
Then I'll put bullets in his dead body.
Matt moved into the barn through the back door. He had to stand there for just a moment to allow his eyes to adjust to the sudden shadows. As he stood there, he heard a slight movement from above, and looking up toward the loft, he saw a few bits of straw fluttering down through a shaft of sunlight. Putting his pistol in his holster, Matt started up the ladder, climbing up very slowly. Goneril heard someone coming up and he smiled, then turned and leveled the big buffalo rifle at the top of the ladder. The top of the hat appeared, then the crown, and finally the entire hat.
I got you!
Suddenly, and to Goneril's complete shock, Matt's head and shoulders appeared above the top of the ladder.
No, you got my hat,
you son of a bitch!
Goneril made a wild, desperate grab for his pistol, just as Matt came over the top of the ladder and rolled across the floor of the house.
You know, when you're trying to kill someone, you should really hit what you're aiming at. Take this, for example.
Matt walked over to look down at Goneril's body, then, on impulse, searched through his pockets until he found the little piece of paper he was looking for. He wrote something on the paper and stuck it in Goneril's mouth.
This is from my horse, Spirit.
Frederica walked to the door and opened it.
Matt! You came for me. I knew you would.
Lane threw herself into his arms, embracing him and kissing him. Matt didn't push her away. After the effusive greeting and a heartfelt expression of gratitude to Frederica and Maria, Matt and Lane stepped back outside.
Well, now, looky here. Looks like you found my girl for me.
Trayhorn and Paulie were standing about 10 yards in front of Frederica's house, pistols drawn.
How'd you get here?
Well, you know what they say, Jensen. Can't keep a good man down.
Strayhorn looked at Lane and made a lateral motion with his pistol.
You, get over there.
Do it, Lane. I don't want you anywhere near me right now.
Good thinking, Jensen, because we're about to shoot you dead. Frederica, you whore! You come out here, too! Do it now, or I'll kill this bitch where she stands!
No, senor! Don't shoot! I will come!
Don't come out, Frederica! He's going to shoot me whether you come out or not!
From behind him, Matt heard Frederica come out of the house. She moved over to join Lane.
Now, Jensen! You...
Before Paulie could react, Matt's pistol was in his hand. From behind him, Frederica's daughter Maria came out of the house carrying a smoking shotgun. Walking over to Strayhorn's body, she kicked it.
You will never rape a young girl again.
Matt, Lane, and Governor Rout were having coffee and cake in the parlor of the governor's mansion.
Another piece of cake, Matt?
Thank you, but no. The piece I had was very good and very generous.
That's my fault, I'm afraid. I have trained my kitchen staff not to be parsimonious when it comes to serving dessert. What about you, my dear? Would you like another piece?
No, I couldn't eat another bite. Why, you fed me so now that I won't need to eat a bite for the entire train trip back home.
You're sure you don't want to use my private car?
No, thank you. I'll be just fine.
Well, I can't say as I blame you. Getting back on that car would have to bring up unpleasant memories for you. I'm so sorry that your visit with us had to wind up so disastrously.
Nonsense. I loved my visit here. I met several wonderful friends, and it was very exciting. All right, maybe a little too exciting, but I will certainly have stories to tell for the rest of my life.
You will at that, won't you? Well, you will be pleased to know that I have sent some people into Dorina to run out the riffraff and to restore law and order to that town. It isn't right that an entire town should be stolen from the people, as Dorina was.
I'm glad. I'm so glad you paid the reward to Signora Reno.
She deserved it. And I'm thankful to Mr. Jensen for bringing you safely back to your family.
I hope Frederica can make a new life for herself.
I believe she will.
I just wish Mabel had lived long enough to collect the reward as well. She and Frederica were very brave women.
And so was Maria.
Yes, so was Maria. It's just that I think of her more as a little girl than a woman.
She grew up.
I guess she did. What's going to happen now to Mr. Highgate?
Mr. Highgate is going to spend a very long time in prison.
The funny thing is, I believe him when he said that he didn't really want any harm to come to me. I believe him when he says he regrets his part in all of this.
Yes, well, he'll have a long time to contemplate those regrets.
Oh, heavens! It's 2 o'clock already. The train leaves at 3. I had better get ready to go to the depot.
I'll have the carriage brought around and go to the depot with you.
I'd better get going as well. Miss Mackenzie?
Surely you've earned the right to call me Lane by now.
Lane, you are a remarkable young lady. The boys and girls in your classroom will be very lucky to have someone like you as their teacher.
Thank you, Matt. Are we never to meet again?
I wouldn't say that. Never's a very long time.
Although he could have left Denver by train, Matt preferred to ride away on his new horse, a spitting image of Spirit, bought for him by the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad.
I'm giving you a good name, a noble name, a name I hope you can live up to. I'm going to call you Spirit.
As the bustling city of Denver fell behind him, Matt studied the country before him. Somewhere, on the other side of the next range of hills, just over the horizon, there would be more towns to see, more world to explore. It was already getting on into fall, and a chill wind blew down from the north. There'd be snow in the higher elevations soon. Maybe Matt would go south.
Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man Number 2, Deadly Trail, is a Graphic Audio production.
Copyright 2008, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Tony Penny, James Lewis, Ken Jackson, Terrence Aselford, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Laura Quinn Anderson, Yasmin Toison, Nanette Savard, Ren Casey, Eric Messner, David Coyne, MJ Casey, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, and James Konacek. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed and adapted by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Greg Reinfeld. Digital effects design by Greg Reinfeld and Johan Detweiler. Additional music by Johan Detweiler and Brian Patton. The Matt Jensen theme was composed and performed by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed Matt Jensen Number 2, Deadly Trail, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man, and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Sakage, a lord of shadows. I claim the shadows that the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Strider. All the pieces will be put into play. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless. A new darkness will rise. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. I will do justice and love mercy. The final battle will threaten all the world. Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down. And only Kyler can stand in the way of the Krull.
There's no way to win except to raise these monsters. It will be an orgy of death.
Then let us raise monsters.
The end is nigh. Find out where all the pieces fall in Beyond the Shadows, Parts 1 and 2. Available in graphic audio.
I will give Yatol Grish his soldiers, some of the best of the Jacintha garrison. But he must promise to use them to march across the steppes, destroying all resistance and punishing the Togairu so terribly that they will never again think to defy us. Tell your Yatol to exact a generational purge of the Togairu. I will not have them as any threat during the time of transcendence. A generational purge. Eliminate their would-be warriors. All of them.
We will break their heart and their will, and so Darian will fall.
I am the greatest warrior. Or do you fear that your warriors will see the truth of me and fall to their knees, pledging their allegiance to Acridelius instead of to Bryn?
Forward!
her down and kill her.
She is a Nat, Yatul. She flies about us while we swipe futilely at her. But those things are not lethal. We have missed her thus far, but one hit...
Hunt her down and kill her.
Yes, Yatul. She is a cunning foe, and she has not aired of yet. But while her perfection of tactics has kept her alive, it has not truly wounded us. When she makes her first error, it will be her last.
Hunt her down and kill her!
I am Paganel of the Walk of Clouds, Cheshru Chieftain Do'wan. I am he who knows the truth of Yakim Do'wan. I am he who knows the truth of transcendence. I have seen you at use with your soul stone, Yakim Do'wan.
He is a fool and a liar. Kill him at once.
You have spirit walked Yakim Do'wan. That is how you fought the dragon of Togai. Each night you go out and seek her, and you cannot go out without a gemstone.
Finish him!
Don't miss the final chapter of the Demon Wars Saga, Book 6, Transcendence, Part 3. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.